And welcome back to Coast. Scott Portzline with us. We'll be back with your phone calls. I've got a few more questions for him. We'll do it all next on Coast to Coast AM. We are back with Scott Portzline. Scott, we were talking about mutants. Just how severe could this be?
Well, it could absolutely change the human race to the point where we're barely recognizable. So what happens, because of the energy that's emitted by radiation, it causes cellular damage within the body. And when the cells attempt to repair themselves, a lot of times they're successful. Sometimes the cells die. But once in a while, the cells start dividing in a very odd way, and that becomes a cancer in many cases. So what happens to the DNA, there can be some information that's knocked off the DNA chain, and the cell will survive in a healthy manner but be missing certain information. So you could be born without the gene to protect you from a certain, like some people have troubles with peanut allergies. I don't know if there's a peanut allergy gene or not, or, you know, protection, but whatever the defect is that is occurring in your DNA can cause you to have a problematic life. Now, as it gets really bad with DNA, it could literally mutate the human body to where our eyes no longer are working, or maybe we don't have arms that are more than a foot long. Who knows? I mean, all of these, anything's possible. It is science fiction at that point, but it's real.
Yeah, it is very real indeed. Now, let's go ahead.
Tell you a little bit more about mutations.
Sure.
Something that I'm proud of with Three Mile Island Alert, the group here in Harrisburg that keeps an eye on the nuclear plant. We have one member who collected plants that appeared to be mutated following the accident. Now, she, on the morning of the accident, had that metallic taste in her mouth and started noticing in the next year or two that some of the plants and trees and leaves weren't formed properly. So she collected over 300 specimens and documented where and when and what the defects are. We, this past year, made a database and are sending it to the Smithsonian, who is accepting it. It's very rare to have something accepted by the Smithsonian. But on their botany page, well, a lot of people don't realize it's actually a premier world science laboratory and science museum. On their botany page, it says that one of their missions is to study how man is affecting plant life. So they were more than happy to hear that we were going to send them something, that in the future they will have new tools and techniques to determine whether radiation from Three Mile Island actually did cause these misshapen plants.
Now, what about the waste now from these plants? Where do we dispose them? They were talking about Yucca Mountains, but what do we do with this stuff?
Yeah, that's a major problem. And now plants are starting to store them in the parking lot, as I like to say, in dry cask storage units. Those are actually safer than the spent fuel pools, which are very risky. But I'm not happy about the waste cask being at Three Mile Island. If they go to that, if they extend the life for Three Mile Island, they're about to run out of spent fuel pool space. And that means they will put these 2.5 miles from an international airport on a river that floods. In fact, when TMI was under construction, the flood, the river ended up in the basement of the reactor buildings, what was going to become the buildings. So I really worry. And then, of course, these are terrorist targets once they start moving this stuff on the highways and on the railways. And I've witnessed rule breaking. If you go to our website, TMIA.com, you'll be able to find some videos. There's a link you can see the videos that we've posted. I have one where I'm explaining how I saw a train on the third day in a row of 96 degree heat hauling high-level nuclear waste past Harrisburg, and there had just been a derailment the day before in Washington, D.C., because of the high temperatures warping the tracks. Now, why isn't there a rule that these trains cannot move like this after derailments already happened, let alone, you know, 3 days in a row of 96-degree heat? They should not even be moving at that
point. Good point. Let's take some calls for you, Scott. Let's start by going to Elaine in Seattle, west of the Rockies. Elaine, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
My question was concerning Fukushima and if the radiation leakage there had been fully contained.
Not at all. In fact, they're still leaking hundreds of gallons of water, hundreds of tons of water from the groundwater that's seeping in to the reactor building. And there are some reports that they're still spraying water on those reactors, but I don't think that's correct. You know, once the secrecy starts, it's hard to get exact information. And the confusion that goes on even gets passed around amongst some of the experts. So I can't give you a definition of exactly where all that radiation is coming from, but we know that it involves the groundwater. And there's nothing they can do about it. They tried to build an ice wall underneath. And everybody who had any common sense with a little bit of engineering skill realized that was not going to work, and it didn't work. So they're actually still now planning to dump all those tanks of radioactive water stored around the site into the ocean after they filter it somewhat. But you can't filter it all, and it's a tremendous amount of radiation, and you can't filter tritium because tritium is water, and there's just no way to get that out of the system. So they're going to be polluting their own fisheries and the whole world in the end.
13 municipalities affected by Fukushima have reported that about 573 deaths have been certified as disaster-related. That's huge, isn't it?
Well, not really, because it's much huger than that. They're probably saying that those are deaths caused by stress and suicides and things like that. It's probably not even. They're not saying that about radiation. The government's claiming no one was harmed by the radiation.
You know what? How could they say that? Because this thing could take years for people to die off, right?
Oh, absolutely. That's correct. But what we saw here at Three Mile Island indicates to us that these cancers and thyroid problems and leukemias do develop it within the first 2 years, and that was unexpected. See, this is all a big experiment that the human race is taking on. And speaking of experiments, that's what caused Chernobyl. They were doing a test to see what would happen if they lost power to the reactor, and would the turbine keep spinning long enough to bring up a system that would supply electricity to itself. Well, we have rules here in the United States not to do those kind of tests. But right now at Three Mile Island, we have a problem with the steam generators that I found. When they replace the steam generators, that's a very big piece of equipment that removes all the heat from the reactor, and you need them for safety systems, especially during an emergency. But ours could self-destruct because the new design that came from a French company called Areva, in fact, they had a big scandal where they falsified a lot of safety documents a couple of years back, and they had to go bankrupt. And there's a blurry line between the reactor programs in France because the government is backing all of them. And in fact, Areva probably declared bankruptcy before, but we can't determine that for certainty. Well, at TMI, these steam generators came from Areva, and they have a manufacturing defect which caused the steam tubes to bow close together and rub against each other and wear. And that's where the reactor coolant passes through those tubes. And if they wear enough, then you have a loss of coolant action. You have a steam tube rupture. And in this particular case, it would also be called a containment bypass accident, where radiation is released directly from the reactor to the turbine building, and then there's no filters, no containment building, and it goes into the environment. And it's something that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is very afraid, if that were to ever happen, how disastrous that would be.
Let's go to Thomas in La Jolla, California. Tom, go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call. Scott,
sure.
Great research. Truly appreciated. Scott, I wanted to ask you about Los Angeles. And here in Los Angeles, we're familiar with the San Onofre reactor. But there's another reactor, and that's the Santa Susana Test Facility. And before Three Mile Island, they had a nuclear meltdown, which released more radioactive atmospheric plume, several times more than Three Mile Island over West Los Angeles. And the only reason why we know about this is because of various reporters filing Freedom of Information Act requests on Santa Susana, which is now currently administered by NASA and Boeing. So I was wondering if you would comment or if you have any more information on the Santa Susana test facility.
Well, you're exactly right, with one exception, and that is that it wasn't so much the reporters. It started with Daniel Hirsch from the Committee to Bridge the Gap. And, George, you've got to get him on the program.
Okay.
I know that the Discover Channel or Discover Magazine, I believe it's Magazine, is working on an article now about that Santa Susana accident, because it really is bigger than Three Mile Island. I trust Dan Hirsch. He's the one that told me about it and that it was worse than Three Mile Island. I believe he's correct. And it's just awful. The cover-up that went on there, and there were people in Los Angeles who definitely got cancers following that.
Horrible situation, my gosh. Steve in Juneau, Alaska. Go ahead, Steven.
Oh, hi, George. How you doing tonight?
Okay, thank you.
Hey, I just got a couple quick questions.
Sure.
The U.S. Navy vessels and all the nuclear vessels that are around the world, like the United States has almost 100 nuclear vessels, Soviets about 60. I guess about probably 20 to 30 for the Chinese, and then there's the French and the Great Britain that's got about 20 each. What happens if those things get, you know, attacked? We had the Thresher and the Scorpion went down in the 60s, and they said there was no nuclear release from that. Just what would happen if we got into a war and these things started getting blown up? Would it destroy all the sea life in the oceans?
I don't think so. And of course, it depends on how many you're talking about. There could actually be zones in the oceans where there's no life that lives on the floor of the ocean. You know, since fish can move around a lot, that would be almost impossible to detect the exact causes. But one thing that the military likes to say is we've never had any problems with our reactors, and they're safe. Well, you know what they're doing is taking their wastewater with the contaminants and the radiation, and they're dispersing it at sea. And they're not going to tell you they're doing that, but that goes on, and that's how. And in fact, some of the waste from the military reactors goes past my home, 700 feet away. That's where I saw the train tracks on that day.
But it just one submarine disaster could be a mess, you know what?
Well, yeah, it depends. In England, they had a near miss a few years ago with a nuclear sub. And if that happens, you know, within a few miles of your coast, oh, my, it's the same thing as a nuclear power plant, maybe not on as big a scale, but you certainly don't want the weapons involved with that either. And look what's happened in the Arctic Ocean above Russia, where their nuclear submarine fleet is rusting away and contaminating the Arctic Ocean and the life, the seaweed, and so forth. It's bad.
Kevin is truck driving in Saskatchewan in Canada. Welcome to the program, Kev. Go ahead.
George, thank you very much. First time, long time.
Well, thank you.
You keep glazing over the Fukushima issues. I'm just wondering if your guest could comment more on maybe the spent cool reactors that are kind of missing, I think. And then how about the Olympics that are going to be coming up right away in Japan? And also the food that they're growing right beside all the reactors and all the rice and everything. And also, I don't know if you guys could ever get Dana Dunaford on to talk about all this also. He's a great guy.
All right. Food, the Olympics, all these problems at Fukushima, Scott.
Well, there definitely is going to be some problems with the food. And there are particles that have showed up even in Tokyo. Arne Gunderson has measured that. There should be a way, if the government wanted to detect all this food and get rid of it or prevent it from being marketed. But, you know, there's even black markets for that, where they may send that food to, for instance, China, and China will put another label on it and sell it. Now, that's happened with other things that have been damaged by radiation. As far as the Olympics, right here in Pennsylvania, we have a fellow named Tom Bailey who's with the Green Party, and he is petitioning the United Nations Human Relations or Human Rights, excuse me, that sending the Olympians, especially the baseball and softball players, into the Fukushima area to play is the wrong thing to do. But I don't have that gut feeling that it needs to be stopped, because I don't think the public relations is helpful. I think he's right. I don't want to have to make that call.
Let's go to Michelle in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. First-time caller for her. Hi, Michelle.
Good evening, Mr. Norrie, and good evening, Mr. Scott.
Hi.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. George, I started listening to you about 5 or 6 years ago, and I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being on the air during the holidays.
Oh,
those of us who don't have anyone and are on their own, that means so much. And you put so much great information on your shows, interesting topics, and I just wanted to say that quick thank you.
We'll always be there for you, always.
Thank you so much. I was 12 years old the day of the meltdown from a TMI. I live north of there in Perry County, but I was 12 years old, and we were sequestered in our homes for quite a while. And decades later, at the age of 49, I was diagnosed with severe thyroid cancer. And what they thought was just a little nodule turned out to be a whole mess of things, and they had to take that entire organ out. And it makes those of us who live around here really scratch their head and say, could these things be related? Because we have so many cancers in our pets as well.
Yes, and you're right about that. I have a sister that lives in Gettysburg, so say hi to her for me. And Perry County is just across the river from my home in Harrisburg. I can see Perry County out my window right now. And the plumes did go that direction at one point. So we hear your story on a regular basis right now. Go on Facebook and look up Three Mile Island Survivors. They want to hear your story, too.
It's a frightening situation, Scott, when you really think about it, isn't it? My
well,
God.
It sure is, but, you know, this is the world we live in. I'm not making excuses. I'm saying that no matter where you go, there is something that's trying to kill you. It doesn't matter whether it's a hurricane, tornado, chemical plant.
Or a terrorist.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, one of the callers, one of your listeners called me today and wanted to talk to me about the EMP or the coronal mass ejection, you know, and so you're definitely making good progress on waking people up.
I think we may have gotten President Trump to get going. He signed an executive order yesterday to conducted an emergency study into that.
Oh, man, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's great news.
Let's keep our fingers crossed and see what happens. We're not going to give up on that, Scott. That's critical.
And
because,
by the way, I forgot to tell the caller this today that called me. I talked with one of the Pennsylvania nuclear engineers who would do inspections and that sort of thing around Pennsylvania at the nuclear plant. He said he did his own study on what natural events did they really have to worry about. He said there was only one. I said, what, a tornado, a flood? He said, no, a coronal mass ejection.
If the power grid goes down, for how long before the nuke plants start to melt down all around the country?
Now, that's where I disagree. I think you have another expert come on named Matt Stein.
Yes.
And it's hard to argue, you know, with somebody of his credentials. But see, nuclear power plants, they do have diesel generators. And they claim, the nuclear industry claims that they have hardened against, you know, an EMP. And they do have filters on their electricity, even when the grid gets wacky with, you know, the frequencies not right and the voltage is high or low. But anyway, a nuclear plant can be brought to a safe shutdown, meaning a warm shutdown that's below the temperature of boiling water, so you don't lose your coolant to boiling, within 3 days. And within 2 weeks, almost any nuclear plant can be brought.
And that's a disaster. Scott, stay with us. We're going to come back and wrap up things with final calls next on Coast to Coast AM. It sounds like Save the Planet night, because next hour, Bob Berman joins me with his work called Earth Shattering, Violent Supernovas, Galactic Explosions, Biological Mayhem, Nuclear Meltdowns, and Other Hazards to Life in Our Universe. So we'll talk with Bob about that. And welcome back to Coast, Scott Portsline with us. Scott, you had mentioned earlier Matt Stein, of course. He passed away about a year ago. He was a good guest.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah, he was.
He knew his stuff. Let's go back to the phones. Joe in Long Island, welcome to the program, Joseph. Go ahead.
Tough topic, but we got to talk about this stuff.
Yep.
With Iran, one of the issues that was on, I believe, a frontline special was a hack that actually affected the mechanisms of the of the working operation of the Iranian nuclear plant. And that sounds pretty dangerous in the sense that if that melts down, you know, that'll ruin the area and go down to Africa. And the second thing would be, I don't think these plants, say in France, would be able to withstand conventional World War II type bombing. And then you've got these thermonuclear hydrogen bombs on the submarines. There's about a dozen of them. And each of them, they say, would kill approximately 5 million people instantly. So a launch into a populated country could kill 50 million people from one submarine.
Of course. No question about it. Scott?
Yeah, but when he talked about the Iranian program, that wasn't a nuclear reactor. That was a facility where they enriched uranium. So what the Western intelligence, nobody admits to who actually perpetrated this, injected a virus known as a man-in-the-middle attack into these centrifuges, and it caused the centrifuges to spin so rapidly that they broke apart, they self-destructed. And the man-in-the-middle part refers to, while this is happening, the code of the program, the virus, sends information to the controllers that everything's normal, the speeds all appeared to be normal. They had no idea what was ruining the program. Well, that ended it for about 3 years, but they're back at it again. And then the other part you mentioned about France, you're right about the bombing, but they had a disturbing event about 4 years ago with the drones that were flying over their nuclear plants, and the military helicopters couldn't keep up with them, and they disappeared, never did figure out who did it. And when they flew over, these were small drones, so small that they didn't show up on radar, but big enough with powerful engines to outfly these military aircraft. When they flew over the nuclear plants, they shone a light down as if they were illuminating for photographs. And it's still a mystery to this day, as far as I can determine now. Maybe someone in intelligence knows the answer to what really happened.
Scott, what about hacking into these power plants? Possible?
Well, I'll tell you something big. I mean, last year the Department of Homeland Security said that hackers were able to penetrate the control rooms of hundreds of U.S. utilities. Now, that's just, it didn't say nuclear control rooms, but I'm sure they were hacked also. Here's what happened in Pennsylvania last October. The Department of Justice announced that 7 Russian military hackers used new techniques on the ground technical reconnaissance outside the Westinghouse nuclear headquarters. And what they did was rent a car in the back of the trunk. They put in their own Wi-Fi equipment, you know, with computers and so forth. And then they did a spear phishing technique. That's where you send an email to a company employee, and you put a link on there that you cause them to click on.
Mm-hmm.
And they disguise it by taking Westinghouse, or the G in Westinghouse, they changed it to a Q. And they made it look exactly like all the other websites that you would go to as a Westinghouse employee. And the email was sent out, and these people unknowingly clicked on it. It took them to a spoofed website that these Russian military hackers had set up, where they would put in their passwords and their credentials. And once they had captured that, now they had an in to Westinghouse's inner circle there for their nuclear designs. And then the spoof site would kick them back out, or take them to the real site, so no one knew what was going on. In fact, Westinghouse didn't know about it until the Department had just told them about it and the indictments were made. Now, here's the scary part. Westinghouse is already bankrupt. What this did, if they handle it properly, would mean they have to go through every single line of code, every drawing, every design plan, every value to be sure it hadn't been changed. Because just like what we did in Iran, hackers from Russia could have done to Westinghouse. And so they make a bad component with some bad coding in it or a bad design fault somewhere. You have a nuclear disaster because of it. This happened right here in Pennsylvania 6 months ago.
Let's go to John, Austin, Texas. Welcome to the program, John. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, how you doing, Sidney?
Well, I can barely hear you, John. One more time. Nope. John is gone. But Barbara in Los Angeles, I'm sure she's there. Hi, Barb.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Yeah, I'd like to ask your guest, when does he think Fukushima is going to stop leaking?
Well, I like the question. I'm usually good at these oddball questions, meaning that most nuclear scientists don't think about them. I'm certainly not a scientist, so I think in an oddball way. Maybe 30 years from now, they'll find some way to handle it.
That long?
Oh, yeah. I think, when you get down to the enormity of what would need to be done. For instance, there might be a way to do something with bentonite clay. But I don't know. I don't know what's possible there. Boy, I had a friend who was an engineer, and he dealt with that type of matter. I wish he was alive, so I'd ask him.
Let's go to Stan in Moline, Illinois. Welcome to the program, Stanley. Go ahead.
Yes, I just want to, first off, I'll give you a little bit of background. I was, I grew up fairly close to TMI. I was in the Navy in the nuclear power program there, and I currently work at a nuclear power plant. So what is your daily interactions as far as the updated procedures and everything as far as nuclear reactors today?
I'm not sure I understood the question. What is the daily?
So, I mean, as far as everything that's gone through since the Three Mile Island incident, and from today, what are your daily interactions with commercial nuclear power?
Well, the most recent thing is I filed a petition for enforcement action at Three Mile Island because of the defect we see with the steam generator, the steam tubes. I meet with the resident inspectors. I have phone conferences sometimes with the NRC. I don't have daily interactions, but maybe you have some more that you wanted to say about that.
No, he's off now, Scott.
Okay. Yeah, he might have been challenging me, you know, as to how much I actually know. And I do get mistaken for an engineer. Now, I'm not trying to brag because I always refute that and say, no, I'm not. But some of the best nuclear engineers around have always thought that I was an engineer because I know what I'm talking about to some degree.
If you had your way, would you do away with nuclear power all over the place?
Yeah. There's just too many risk and security matters that go with that. See, the future, I've probably mentioned this to you before, the future is going to be a hydrogen economy. And so we will generate hydrogen, which is expensive to generate, with using wind power or solar power. And then we will pipeline that to facilities where they will be able to use and distribute the hydrogen to generate electricity, to power your vehicles and so forth. Now, why do I say that? Because hydrogen is everywhere. You don't have to protect the Straits of Hormuz over near Iran, for your naval shipments of the oil. And it's just, there's plenty of hydrogen. It is expensive to filter it, you know, to create it, but it's doable. That's going to happen someday.
John's back in Austin, Texas. I hope for the better connection. John, go ahead.
Yeah, how you doing this evening?
There you go. Good.
I kind of wanted to rephrase the question that the first caller was talking about with the containment.
Yeah.
Aren't we really talking about the slow death of the Mediterranean with all that stuff leaking in there since it happened? And how do you filter 100,000 gallons of uranium, I guess uranianized water, and they're going to put that back in the ocean?
When you say Mediterranean, who's dumping that much radiation in there?
That's right next to Fukushima, right?
Oh, the Mediterranean is behind north of Africa and to the east of Spain.
Okay, well, what's the ocean next to Fukushima? That's right on the coast, right?
I don't know what sea they would call it.
It's a sea of, isn't the Sea of Japan?
I believe that's between Japan and China or North Korea.
Well, I mean, the water is leaking into that big body of water that's right there next to Fukushima. Isn't everything going to die there?
There will definitely be mutations and cancer deaths caused to the fish life. I wouldn't be surprised. I'm kind of surprised right now that we're not seeing reports of it being in the tuna. There was reports of it even from the coast of Alaska and the fisheries up there. I don't follow that in a an extensive way anymore because there's a lot of other people following that. So I'm focusing on what I've done, but your question and concern is completely valid. And, of course, if this keeps up, you better believe it's going to affect a lot of oceanographic life.
The Pacific Ocean is east of Fukushima. The Sea of Japan is west of Fukushima. It's almost in the middle in Japan there.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you. I was going to look that up, too.
It's what a tragedy, though. My gosh.
Yeah.
They never expected it, did they?
I did. Arne Gunderson did. David Lockbaum did. And here's how that worked. We had been talking independently and to each other. I was asked on another radio show, nationwide show, where would the next nuclear accident occur? This was in 1999. I said, Japan. Now, I didn't really know that, George, but I had read what was going on in Japan, and it was just like Three Mile Island.
Sure.
It can't happen here. Then there was criminal falsifications going on and other smaller events, including a refinery at or an enrichment facility at Tokamura. And David Lockbaum had been saying that's going to happen at an old plant. And he has what's called the bathtub curve, that when a plant is new, there's a lot of problems. And when a plant gets old, there's a lot of problems. The sweet spot's in the middle. And then Arne Gunderson said the next nuclear accident would happen at a Mark I GE reactor building. And when you put all three of those together, that describes Fukushima precisely.
We're going to Joe in Knoxville, Tennessee now. Joseph, go ahead.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
The reactors he's talking about are water reactors. They build a tremendous amount of pressure. Well, there's the molten salt reactor would be different. It operates in atmosphere. He's talking about somebody blowing it up. All they do is knock a hole in it, and the salt would melt out and fall on the ground and lock and turn into a salt. At Oak Ridge, back in the late 60s, they had molten salt reactors. He was talking about how it takes 3 days to shut a reactor down. That's true. But with the molten salt experiments in the 60s, they could actually shut it down on a Friday, take the weekend off, and fire it back up Monday. Alvin Weinberg, the inventor of the reactor he's talking about, is the one who led to the aircraft reactor experiments, which led to the molten, which was where the molten salt reactor come from. By the way, we're not really working on it. The Chinese are, though. They're working on it big time. They will have them soon. Oh, by the way, the Chinese also have a pebble bed reactor, and they use helium for cooling. They guarantee it won't melt down now.
That's smart.
But the molten salt one, and by the way, they use thorium mostly in those. It's a shame. You really need to look in. I know that on the molten salt reactor and the Thorium Energy Alliance conference, they go into a lot of this. There's a Kirk Sorsen who talks about it. And he was a NASA scientist who got into this. But seriously, molten, what happens is there's no pressure. Those water reactors, they build thousands of pounds of pressure. And when they have a leak, it spews out.
What do you think of that, Scott?
Well, here's where it's wrong. When molten salt, it's molten salt, leaks, it catches on fire. So they're very dangerous. Every country who's ever tried those have abandoned them, and he's right in the sense that if you build a small reactor, you can shut it off, and it doesn't take 3 days to cool down because it's so small. It's not generating that much heat. The Japanese nuclear program that tried a molten salt reactor, breeder reactor, was Manju. They had fires there and covered that up. That was one of the reasons I knew criminal activity was happening in Japan. The pebble bed reactor that he mentioned, there's already been nuclear accidents with pebble bed, and they've been abandoned. The United States was even considering doing that. And the problem there is you can't make perfect fuel. They make a tennis ball size fuel pellet but they can't make them perfectly. There's always a defect in them, and that's what caused the problem at the Amhot reactor in Germany 9 days after Chernobyl. That reactor accident was very small and got lost in the hype from the Chernobyl accident, but nobody is pursuing that in the United States because it's not doable. We don't have the engineering capabilities yet to handle those high temperatures and the problems associated with leaking molten salt.
Scott, thank you for the information. Stay in touch with us. Scott's website, TMIA.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, earth-shattering.